Same is true when you take out a personal loan or start a business. You have to create a plan.
Yeah.
And when you do that with your partner, you also have to create a plan to get a path out of blame and resentment, because that comes either way. You know, based on your plans for what you want to do and his plans for what he wants to do, both of you have kind of indulged in this little blame kink or something, where you both pretend like you know exactly what's going to happen in the future and you're acting accordingly. He knows that the business is going to be great by April, and you know that you're going to need a side gig because this thing is not working out. The truth is, neither one of y'all know.
Correct.
Right? And it doesn't matter, because as a married couple, you're both going to be responsible.
Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Julian.
And I'm Kirsten. And today we're talking about how to know when you should give up on your business or your dream. This is going to be a good episode, y'all. But first, I just want to give a shout out to all the new people that have joined us. About 100 of y'all subscribed on YouTube in the last month. We got another couple dozen on our email list, and we've just met hundreds of people in the last month through speaking engagements and all that jazz. So thank you for being here. If you're not subscribed, go ahead and hit that subscribe button, both on Apple Podcasts or whatever you're listening to, or on YouTube. And if you don't want to commit, if you've got some commitment issues, just hit that like button. That goes a long way. Or share it, you know. We'll take either one.
I love it. Okay. We're going to jump right into this one. And in the spirit of doing things a little differently, last week we had an episode where it was just Kirsten. We switched things up a little bit from what we normally do. And we're going to switch it up again this week. This conversation is really inspired by an email that we received. And we get emails from people all the time, DMs, and we respond pretty much to all of them. And we have for the last couple of years. This is one that came in that was particularly interesting. And so what we're going to do is actually respond to that email in the form of this podcast, because the email was centered around, hey, I really, really want some advice. I'm in this situation. Here's what's happening. It's a married couple. One of them is trying to start this business, trying to grow this business. The other is trying to be supportive, but is very scared because things are not looking very well. And so they're at this fork in the road where they don't know whether or not they should keep on going. Should she be supportive? It's kind of not necessarily messy, but it's
just
it's real.
Yeah.
And part of the reason why we're doing this is because we can relate. And we know so many people that we have met over the years who can relate. We know so many people who've started businesses in the last couple of years. And there's always that other person, that person behind the scenes that is trying to keep things together.
Holding it down.
Holding it down while the other person is supporting the stream. And so the question and the kind of point of this podcast is to figure out, like, not necessarily when to give up. That's how it was phrased. But, like, how to think, how to navigate these kinds of situations. So I know Kirsten in particular has a different point of view than I do. And so it's going to be interesting as we kind of tackle this topic together. But I also know personally you have your own kind of native point of view on, like, what it means to be supportive for the other person based on your personal experience and the way you were raised.
Yeah. I mean, you came home talking about quitting your job.
I did.
And gave me a 24-hour notice. So I definitely understand what it feels like to feel like you're close to the edge, right? To feel like, you know, I have to do this or I'm not being supportive. Yeah. And hopefully this episode will help you realize that that's a false choice.
Yeah.
You can absolutely be supportive and honor whatever your intuition is telling you.
Yeah. So this is almost like a it's like a column in a way, right? Where you write in and you say, hey, here's my situation. I know a lot of other podcasts do this. We've never done this before. And so this is going to be interesting. A couple of things before I jump in. And this is like disclaimer, like heavy disclaimers. One, I'm going to keep her name private.
Obviously, she does know we're recording this.
She does know that we're recording this. We did let her know. She asked, actually.
Yeah.
And we'll mention that. If even by chance we happen to slip something, I think in the edit, we will go ahead and bleep that just to ensure that we're not revealing too much information. And the third thing I would say is, I think as experienced entrepreneurs and as a married couple, we do have a point of view, and this is what she's asking for. And so we're going to give it. The subject of the email was, advice. And here's what it said. I'm not sure if this is the right forum for a podcast question. How do you know when to give up on a business dream? My husband started a business with no plan, and now we are near bankruptcy. His idea is to float it on credit card debt until more income is available. Should I be a supportive wife at our detriment, or put my foot down and stop while the hole isn't too deep? Some background. The business needs $5,000 before profit can be made monthly. The business account has $2,000. We have $2,000 in personal savings, $2,000 in credit card debt, $100,000 personal loan that started the business. We both are government employees. Our total salary is around $75,000, and he has $40,000 in his TSP, which is a thrift savings plan. I have $5,000 in my TSP and $9,000 in a non-employer 401k. Should I remove money from my retirement to continue his dream? Hope you can give guidance. Currently reading Cashing Out, but been a fan since y'all introduction on Love and Marriage Huntsville. Shout out to Love and Marriage Huntsville. I almost forgot that we were on that show.
Every so often they play the reruns, and I get all these text messages or, you know, pings on social media like, girl, is that you and Tisha?
And it's interesting because even given our appearance on that show, it was to help another couple. And so now here it is coming up again, and we are offering this advice or counsel to another couple. So, okay.
Yeah, I want to recap.
Okay.
Yeah. So I want to recap. To be clear, she didn't say it in this email, but in our correspondence, she told us that the business is in the trucking industry. It costs them about $5,000 a month in operating expenses. Their household income is $75,000. They have $4,000 in savings in cash between the personal account, personal savings account, and the business savings account.
Yeah.
They owe a little bit over $100,000, and the payments that they make towards this debt are part of the $5,000 expense line in their business.
Yeah.
And then they have about $55,000 saved for retirement. Now, as shocking as that may sound to a lot of people at home, this is the reality for most businesses,
for sure.
Right? Most businesses run on OPM, not to be confused with opium, OPM, other people's money. And in personal finance, that's called debt. But in business, that's called leverage, depending on how much it costs you to borrow that money.
Yeah.
And that's determined by your interest rates, which is why the political environment is so hot and heavy right now.
Yes.
But let's keep going, because I know she gave us some more context in other correspondence.
Yeah. So she followed up with that after we responded and said, hey, yeah, we actually would be interested in recording a podcast on this rather than giving her some long drawn out email. So she added in a couple of other details. She was very generous with sharing some information. One is that the business is 5 months old. Two is that the spouse has been in the military for 8 years. She mentioned the expenses. So basically the monthly income was $5,500 and the expenses are around $4,000, which, you know, excluding housing since the military gives them a stipend for that. So basically there's a little bit of cushion in the personal finances every single month. Again, she talked about basically his plan, which was to keep on going, take the personal loan, roll it over into credit cards and use that to kind of keep them afloat with the plan that by April, they would have enough income to pay for the business account. Did not give us details as to how that would happen. So I don't know if that was just a hope or if this was something like a contract had been secured or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then she said that her plan was basically like to kind of give up on the business, get a side gig, a second job or something like that to supplement what they're doing to help basically stop the bleeding. What I was particularly struck by was one of the lines in her second email where she said, when I approach him with logic, I'm met with, you don't have faith in me or the Lord.
Lord, Lord. So that's, you know, that's where I want to start.
So there's a lot, there's a lot here. We're going to address it in a number of ways, but let's start because clearly you have, the Spirit has taken over you. You have a point of view on something.
Yeah, I wanted to start with the faith part because it doesn't sound like you lack faith, right? Debt and credit are both forms of optimism and a belief that you'll be able to pay it back in the future. So I don't think faith is the issue. You would not have taken out these big loans if you did not have some level of faith. It sounds like you lack confidence in your business more so than faith. And I would say I'm specifying the business more than your husband. You lack confidence in the business.
Yeah.
And I want to talk a little bit about what it takes to have that kind of confidence to start and sustain a business. So like I said, Julian came home with about a 24-hour notice that he was planning to leave his job. That was always the plan, but it
was... Well, not to quit in 24 hours notice, but yes, the plan was always to walk away.
In a couple of years.
A couple of years early.
Yeah, he was doing it a couple of years early. We had this new baby at home. I was getting traction in my career, so I felt fairly confident that I would have a promotion soon. But either way, it was a pretty sudden decision, and had to make a call. You know, it wasn't necessarily a question at the time. It was like, I think I'm going to, and I had the option to object. But at that point, I felt very much like she does, the letter writer does, because I wanted to support you. You were saying very clearly that this is something that you believed in, that you were experiencing this struggle at work, and the best way for you to use your time and your energy would be to focus on our business. Now, financially, several of the reasons I was able to say yes so easily is because we had a paid off mortgage. We had hundreds of thousands of dollars in retirement compounding at a great rate because, you know, we were in the tail end of a bull market. We had a business that was young but was showing signs of life. We already had traction at Rich and Regular. We had a rental property that was appreciating in value and producing cash flow. And then I had my own job, which was also, you know, earning over six figures. And so we had all of these layers that made it feel like, okay, well, if this goes wrong, we still have this. If this goes wrong, we still have this.
Yep.
When you have that kind of cushion, you can actually embrace the risk that comes from entrepreneurship instead of being afraid of it. Now, the good news in this case, in the letter writer's case, is that they have fairly stable jobs. Government jobs are not known for a ton of turnover, and you know the benefits are there, their housing is covered. And so that's the good news. The next step is to actually figure out what kind of cushion they need to support the business that they've chosen to operate. Yeah. And the way to do that is to understand your burn rate, which is how much you're spending every month on the business. In this case, she's been very clear, it's $5,000. And once you know your burn rate, then you can figure out what a comfortable amount of cash in the bank is for you. Now, for us, we have an asset-light business, so we don't have a bunch of ongoing costs or big loans that we need to pay off. So our cushion is about 3 to 4 months of operating expenses in cash in the bank account at any given time. Because this business is so expensive,
yeah,
it might look more like 6 to 8 months, especially in these beginning stages because the income is so variable. But let's just start small with a 3-month cushion. And so that means you would need about $15,000 in terms of cushion to feel more comfortable about how much the business is costing you. They currently only have $2,000, yeah, so they're about $13,000 short.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend touching the retirement account, and we'll talk about why in a little bit. But it's helpful to know that solving the confidence issue is like a minimum $13,000 problem.
Yeah, it's interesting because this sounds so much like the conversation we had about risk and confidence.
Yeah.
And I think what a lot of people just struggle with wrapping their head around, right? Because obviously there is a quantitative measure here. You can say, yes, you need to have $15,000 or whatever that number is. And you can look at where you are and then back into how long it might take you to get there. But if we're being honest, even when you have that number, it does not like make all of the pressure or the tension go away, right? It's there.
No.
And then you have to question whether or not you should use it, or should you find some other source to use it, or should we find some other way to try to earn more money? And maybe that doesn't work out. And so this is part of the psychological journey of what it means to being an entrepreneur, is to get more comfortable living on a roller coaster, right? Like that's basically what it is. And I think along those lines, I would add, in addition to all of the things that you listed that we had that worked in our benefit, there was also a psychological safety cushion as well, because right, we did actually have experience working together. I don't know if this person had that or not, but we had experience working together in corporate America. We'd worked together 5 years before we had done that. We had experience even making non-traditional decisions together, kind of bucking the system in terms of our wedding and all of these other things. And so none of those softer issues or concerns were kind of being incorporated into the decision-making process, right? We already broke through those things. We had renovated our home from floor to ceiling already. We'd gotten a rental property. So even like the idea of collaborating and working together, like those were things that we had done before. And I knew we could tap back into when it was time for us to start that business. And so all of that to say, she didn't really share any of those details, but I would be willing to guess that since it's a young business, that's probably part of the challenge here, right? Yeah. You start talking to entrepreneurs, especially entrepreneurial couples, they're all going to tell you about some really, really difficult times that they had.
Yes.
And hopefully they made it through. But like, hindsight is always going to be 2020, right?
Absolutely.
So that, I think, is a really, really big part of it. The second thing is, and this is a bit of advice, and it's obviously a little too late to do this, but in my experience, you never really want to start a business when you need it to make money instantly.
Yeah.
Like, that's not really how business works, right? Like, you do other things if you need to make money instantly. You start a business because you have an understanding of the market that you're going into. You understand that you have some type of advantage that you can exploit that can lead to profit in the future. But you also understand that you aren't really able to predict when it's going to start clicking and start working, and all of a sudden you start earning that kind of profit. And so even going back to what they were saying before around it being in April, I'm willing to bet that if they listen to this in April and they say like, oh, well, it didn't happen, you can't really take that one thing and lose all confidence. Like, if that were the case, you probably just don't really have the kahunas to be in business. Like, you have to be willing to deal with so much more. And I think there's a bit of that that has to do with the amount of money that you have in the bank. But there's also a huge part of it, I think, is just emotional and psychological resilience.
Yeah. Yeah. And the industry that you choose,
that
which
too.
Is the second point
that
for me. You know, the business that they started is in the trucking industry. And we spoke about the trucking industry in episode 125 of the podcast, so you can go back and listen to that. But the gist of that episode was that the industry is very much in transition and in decline in a lot of ways. There were a lot of big players that were filing for bankruptcy, and we believe that there were a lot of established players that were kind of abandoning the industry, which was a red flag. But we saw so many people, particularly Black people, entering the industry, and we were giving a little bit of an overview of what we saw and being cautious because they were jumping in almost to their detriment.
Yeah, no, but I think it's safe to say we saw a glorification of the industry. And for me, like, I'm just a naturally skeptical person. And so whenever I see everyone saying like, this is a, you know, a no-brainer, this is definitely something that you need to do, like, my first thought was, why are all these trucks for sale? Right.
Right.
Like, because no one gives up the keys to the castle willingly. If you're printing money in this business, you're not all of a sudden willing to give up your routes, give up your inventory, give up your machinery. And so that to me was a huge red flag. I also wrote about this and mentioned it in our book. It was a McKinsey study, and they were talking about the threat of automation and how it had the likelihood of having an adverse effect that was disproportionately going to affect the African-American community. We mentioned that in the book. And so she mentioned she's reading the book. I hope she comes across that section. There is a documentary on Netflix called Working that I know we've mentioned in the past. It was produced by the Obamas, but basically it offered a bit of an insight into how the day-to-day work was like for this company that was basically creating self-driving trucks. And obviously they started talking about the trajectory of that business. And as a result, there's a direct impact on the drivers out there who are saying, hey, like, nobody can do what I do. And these companies are saying, well, actually, AI can. And so all of that to say, I think when people see these things, they hear these things, and they still decide to go forward, like, that is entrepreneurial spirit, right? Mm-hmm. But what some people call entrepreneurial spirit, other people just call delusion, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're crazy. And if it works out, then everyone crowns that person a genius.
Right.
They're one of the visionaries. If it doesn't work out, they say, well, look, I told you so. And this is part of the challenge of going into really any business, but certainly a business like this, where there are pretty large obstacles and there's pretty vocal kind of sources of information saying, hey, this industry is struggling. And again, for this to be a business that's 5 months old, going into a really mature and some would argue dying industry, doesn't mean you can't make money.
Right.
But I do think you should anticipate that there's going to be some downturn. So I would say for anyone that's in that business, anyone that's entertaining it, like, you want to be mindful of those things. Don't just pay attention to the highlights or the earning potential that one person or several people tell you. Try to find sources of information outside of that that might help to supplement your decision-making process and whether or not you think that would be something that you and your family want to be a part of.
Yeah, it sounds like your husband might have the right entrepreneurial spirit, but it's possible that he's in the wrong industry. He's using it in the wrong industry. You know, we're all good at different things. There are some people that are great at operations and they excel at hands-on businesses like this one that are good for those types of that type of energy. And then there are other people that are great at finance and numbers, and they excel at businesses that use those. Same with sales. I think in this case, based on your letter, financial planning is probably not your husband's strong suit. And as an entrepreneur, he shouldn't go at it alone to begin with. It's ultimately a team sport, even if it is a solo or small business. So if he sticks with this, I think he's going to have to get really creative and find the right partners that can help him cash flow quicker or borrow capital much cheaper. So that may mean hiring an accountant, that may mean hiring a business development person, and maybe you pay them on commission for contracts secured. It might even just mean a business coach or some other resource that can help him think through the business processes as they relate to the end goal, which is this, you know, the business needs to be self-funding by April. If you can't back your way into what business processes, what contracts, what vendors, what team you're going to need to do that on your own, then you need to spend some money and have somebody help you.
Yeah.
So I would budget for that at about $5,000 if you can get very specific on the problem that you're trying to solve. There's a lot of offers out there for like ongoing coaching, generic coaching. In this case, because you're so cash strapped, you want to be very specific and look for like a fee only support person, like someone who very specifically can get you contracts or very specifically can look over your books and figure out where savings can come from. At a minimum, if you don't want to invest, find a mentor or a role model. But I would set aside another $5,000. So if we're talking about $13,000 for the confidence issue and $5,000 for the skills gap, we're looking at about an $18,000 hole deficit, or at least incremental money that you're going to need to ramp up the business the way that you want it to.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about credit cards, because that's it's interesting, right? Because like the role that credit cards play in our personal lives, especially if you're using them as an entrepreneur on the business side, is a little different, right? Like there's a comfort level. It's almost like a graduation, right? There's, you're dealing with credit cards in your personal life, but when you got a business card, you know, you've got a different set of resources and all of those things. But I think, you know, when you get to a point where credit cards are really the only option, like that can be a really, really slippery slope, like the slipperiest of slopes. And it's because the way that those interest rates work is just fundamentally different from how they do with a personal loan. You get a personal loan, there's X amount of money that you have. Again, hopefully you've done that financial planning to know that this is your burn rate. This is exactly how you're going to use that money. This is what the anticipation of income is. And as a result, this is how long it will take you to pay off that loan. If you're floating the business, or when you're floating the business on a credit card, at any point they can change the terms of that loan, right? Like the interest rate gets a little bit higher and you just feel that squeeze that much more, or it basically increases your burn rate. You aren't able to make or sustain those payments anymore. And everything kind of suffers because of it. Not just like the debt that you are growing, but also the impact to your credit score. Now, the good news in their case is that they have like these other subsidies in their life with being government workers and the military connection, which I'm not even sure if we mentioned that, but he's in the military or was in the military. Mm-hmm. She's government. So they've got some bit of subsidies that kind of make going through this process a little easier. But what I'm not hearing enough of, which would give me confidence, is here's the amount of contracts that we come in. Here's how much we're closing. Here is an estimate on the pay down period. Like this is all a part of the plan. And so if you don't have that, it just kind of sounds like, oh, I'm going to use credit cards as a bit of a lifeline,
right,
as opposed to using credit cards as a tool. And this is what I meant when I was saying, like, in a personal finance. In a personal finance world, that's kind of okay. You're using a credit card for a lifeline. That's what it's there for.
Yeah.
If you're using it as a lifeline in your business, well, then you got to really start to think about the use of the word lifeline. That means like you are on the edge. And if this doesn't work out, you're kind of done for, you know? Yeah. And so that to me is a bit of a red flag and something that I would really, really be mindful of. So finding some other source of income. And the last thing I'll say is, I know she mentioned how much they had in retirement. I would like to see that number being like a lot higher.
Yeah.
Right. Because to your point, you start drawing down from that. You start calculating what that burn rate is. If that doesn't work out, now not only do you have the personal loan to pay off, but like you've just burnt basically the cushion that you have. You don't have any more money, right?
Yeah, like, and it doesn't take long. If they went all in, it would take 2 years?
That's what I'm saying.
To spend all of their money?
It could easily take somewhere, and this is if they are just like painfully efficient with using every ounce of cushion that they have to support or manage the debt. And again, this is also assuming there's no income coming in. I hope that's not the case, but this could be problematic, like very, very quickly, because you've got this cushion, and I would say like the amount that they said, I'd like that number to be larger, right? And we'll talk a little bit about that, but it's not as much of a cushion so much as it's like a little pillow little bit, right? And that might not necessarily be enough to support the body if you were to fall. And so that's kind of the way that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, I did a quick search on Vanguard. It sounds like this couple is probably in their late 30s, early 40s.
That
maybe,
was my
based
guess. I don't know, but that would be my guess.
It's 8 years in the military, so I mean, they could be younger, but if that's the case, then their $55,000 will likely double, maybe a little bit more than that before they hit retirement age. So that's still not a lot of money for two people.
No, and that's not a diss. That's not to be disrespectful, right?
But no, like, that's just point. Based on the averages. I did a search on Vanguard, and the average balance for 35 to 44-year-olds is $76,000 in their retirement funds. And then 45 to 54-year-olds have $142,000 in their retirement funds. Yeah. So even if they don't fall into either one of those groups, they're still below the average, which is telling. Now, they do have these other subsidies that will help supplement and possibly co-fund their retirements. But it's always nice to have a backup on your own. I'm glad you brought up the income thing, because I wanted to address her plan. We've addressed his plan, which is to use credit cards through April. And then by then, the business will fund itself. I want to address her plan, which was to get a side gig. Because now we have a better idea of how much money you need to make, which is somewhere around $20,000 to $25,000 annually if you're being conservative. And that's accounting for taxes, right? So in theory, you need this amount of money twice a year, but we'll just stick to once a year for a small cash cushion and the ability to hire coaching or whatever supplemental learning your husband might need. So I don't know what her skills are. But driving Uber and like the typical side gigs probably aren't going to produce enough cash to feel like it's a good use of her time, given that she's already a full-time employee.
Yeah.
So this is something that she would be doing after work. So my advice for her in terms of figuring out what side gig would work would be to experiment a lot, fail fast and fail cheaply, to figure out where you have a unique advantage and what makes financial sense for this larger goal.
Yeah, I don't know that the answer is a side gig so much as like it's like another entrepreneurial idea that has an opportunity to be scaled that is based off of what we call her superpower or her unique skill set. You're right. All that would do is like exhaust her, keep her out of the house, and I think create even more distance between her and her husband.
Exactly. Not to mention, there are so many other layers of expenses that you haven't accounted for. So even if you decide to shut the business down, you're still at risk if you are redirecting the personal income that is funding your retirement and paying for your needs down to this debt or covering, you know, what's left of the business. So my suggestions would be to use that same energy that you would have applied to a side gig to either develop a skill or build a network that helps you cash flow your business.
Yeah.
So a lot of this stuff hinges on relationships. Entrepreneurship is far more process driven than one would think. The other half of it is relationships and how well you manage them and how well you take advantage of them. So spending your time doing things like learning how to secure more local contracts, joining small business associations in your town, applying for grants with the DOT, the Department of Transportation, they offer them, meeting with local banks and other small business lenders to get more affordable rates. I don't know what the terms are on the personal loan, but I'm sure they can give you a better rate than credit cards will give you, because those are at like 29% given these high interest rates. And then even something as simple as pitching your story to local news or local newspapers, they love a feel-good story. And so anything that will expand the reach of your business and help connect you to people that might hire you or could at least use the truck while you're not using it would be helpful.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I remember when I started out in real estate, I realized so quickly that there was like the work of finding the properties, buying, selling, renovating, etc. But then there was another body of work that kind of lived outside of that, which is really about networking and building relationships. And those are the things that are going to help you find more properties, or in this case, more contracts, or get ahead of future issues, or, you know, someone at the meeting or on the call or in the mentor community is going to say, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're still using that software. You know, there's a new and improved one, right? And all of those things kind of takes time, but it comes from being present and establishing those relationships. And I think going back to the whole whether or not you should just go get a side gig, I would love to hear a little bit more about what, you know, what that's really what support looks like, where it's like, you know what, let me use my skills and my talents and my resourcefulness to plug in some gaps or help to plant a few more seeds that might give us a better chance of hitting that goal. Because here's the thing, even if you hit that goal in April, guess what? There's May.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's June and so on and so on. So it's like you really might be proving proof of concept.
Yeah.
Right. Or there's some validity to the business, or maybe there's a route here that really is worthy of exploring, but you might need multiple routes. Right?
Yeah.
I don't know enough about the business to be able to offer that kind of counsel. The last thing I will say is I had a conversation with a friend of mine who was in the military. He's a Marine. He's since been discharged. And I had a conversation with him. I was like, hey, I gave him a little bit of the rundown. I was like, what do you think? And his first thought was, you know, in his experience, that there tends to be a mindset amongst people in the military where obviously they benefit from having the perks that come with the service that they provided. But they tend to kind of think like, yeah, well, worst case scenario, I can reenlist. And then it's kind of like batten down the hatches, go back down to this grind period of I'm going to head out there. I'm going to be deployed, or I'm going to be active duty, and I'm going to send back this money. And then that's what we're going to do to kind of squeeze ourselves out of it. I wonder if that to some extent is where the confidence comes from, where he knows that worst case scenario, I can do these things. And in around 2 to 3 years, because it's typically a 4-year term, I know I can back my way out of it. Because again, when we're looking at the numbers and when we're looking at just the dynamics of the relationship, it was like, I'm not 100% sure where this kind of confidence is coming from. But again, I don't have enough of those details. But I do think that if that is the case, you know, there's a lot that goes with that decision, you know,
like
whether or not you want to be deployed again. I don't know if they have children. You know, it's a layered concept, but I don't know that I don't want to discourage it. And again, I don't know enough about it, but I do know that more often than not, there's a reason why people are willing to do that. Because like that's really the unspoken kind of backup plan, not necessarily a cushion, but it's a backup plan that they believe that they can rely on.
That's probably accurate. I think we should start to normalize backup plans that are based on lived experience, whether we can relate to them or not.
Yeah.
But I also think we should start to normalize what it takes to fund a dream that you have. I think it's interesting that there's this larger point here where we don't chastise people for taking out six-figure loans to get a 2-year MBA or to buy a $500,000 house in a dream neighborhood with great schools. But when it comes to financing an entrepreneurial dream, people look at it like it's crazy or like it is impossible to survive. And the path out is the exact same. You have to have a plan. You have to, you know, when you enroll in school, you have to decide how your days are going to be spent to accommodate studying and networking and interviewing and all the things that come with it. When you buy a home, you have to create a plan to figure out how to pay for taxes and repairs. The same is true when you take out a personal loan or start a business. You have to create a plan.
Yeah.
And when you do that with your partner, you also have to create a plan to get a path out of blame and resentment, because that comes either way. You know, based on your plans for what you want to do and his plans for what he wants to do, both of you have kind of indulged in this little blame kink or something where you both pretend like you know exactly what's going to happen in the future and you're acting accordingly. He knows that the business is going to be great by April, and you know that you're going to need a side gig because this thing is not working out. The truth is, neither one of y'all know,
correct,
right? And it doesn't matter, because as a married couple, you're both going to be responsible. So it's worth taking the time to get on the same page and redirect yourselves away from blaming each other and just focus on the conditions that created the situation to begin with, whether it is economic uncertainty. Maybe you expected some contracts to come in and they didn't, or it's poor communication. Maybe he didn't communicate the terms of the loan and how much you would need to pay every month, or maybe it's just a high learning curve. whatever it is, you have to learn how to separate how you feel about the business from how you feel about your husband, how you feel about each other. You can absolutely feel like this trucking business is a complete waste of time and energy without feeling like your husband is the same thing. So that is the other side of the coin as you're thinking about ways that you can contribute, whether it's getting a side gig or starting a side hustle, whatever it is. Also think about the ways that you can rethink about your relationship and what role this loan and this pursuit of a dream plays in how you view your husband.
Yeah. And I think along those lines, I would add, you really need to spend more time talking to other entrepreneurial couples, because what we've learned is that people absolutely, unless you ask, will not share how difficult or challenging it is, right? Yeah. They're going to share the highlights. They're going to share, we came out on the other side, everything's great. Things are going great. We just got the key to the city. You know, like things are popping. But no one talks about, or very few people talk about, how difficult it is to do what you two are trying to do. And so I certainly don't want to encourage you to give up on your dreams. And I know that was the question, like, how do you know when to? And I don't know that I can really answer that question. What I can say is I know what it feels like to be financially stressed or stretched, both really. And those aren't dreams at all. Like, those are nightmares. You don't sleep. You don't even get a chance to have bad dreams, because you can't sleep. You're so overwhelmed and overtaken by the stress and the confusion and not really knowing how things are going to work out and what impact it's going to have on your relationship or your children. Maybe you or both of you are also supporting parents, which makes it even more financially difficult. And we can certainly relate to that. And so I don't really know when or even if you should give up on your dream. I think there's still some work to be done, to be honest. There are some concerns in terms of what happens if things don't work out. But this is where, to Kirsten's point, having other people who can kind of lift that burden a little bit, it might cost you some money, but it may be worth it to get that help to help keep costs lower, whether it's a banker or a coach or someone else that can also help you find more business or unlock more business. All of those things, I think, are relevant. Are relevant points. This reminds me of, it's almost like being married to someone who's super passionate about cryptocurrency, right? Because there's plenty of people who would say, this is crazy. Like, you don't know what you're doing. Everything that I'm seeing on the news says that it's volatile and you shouldn't do it. And then you have a period like we're having right now where Bitcoin is hitting a new high. And if you were one of those people who happened to hold on, which very, very, very few people did, because over the last couple of years, you would have had every reason to give up and say, you know what, I'm just going to find another path. But the few people who held on, in my opinion, have every right to brag and kind of show it in your faces. I will. There are a few things I have some FOMO about, and I certainly wish I dropped a couple thousand back in 2012 when I learned about it. But yeah, it reminds me of that, because again, if things go well, people call you a genius.
That's
and
it.
All the problems are solved, and the people that really did have the faith are your day ones, and they stood by you. And anyone that questioned you, you're looking at them sideways, especially when they're asking you for money. And so I think this is, you know, while I don't believe the trucking industry has the kind of upside that Bitcoin could do, like, it really does just take a couple of contracts, assuming
for that
you
family.
Can secure them, assuming you can manage the debt. Like, that might be all you need. And that could very much be way more beneficial than potentially being redeployed or potentially putting yourself in a situation where you have to seek a job that you don't really feel good about, which just deteriorates other parts of your life. And so that's what I would say. You have to really get comfortable with either one of those outcomes. You need to be comfortable knowing that you could be not as supportive as you think you are. And if things work out, that could have some kind of detrimental impact on your relationship. Or you can just accept the fact that you don't really kind of have what it takes to be an entrepreneur in this way. And that's okay. Assuming you can come to a agreement with your husband and make a decision that this is enough pain that I'm willing to withstand. And this is kind of where I wanted to stop. But you better be comfortable knowing that, hey, what could have been, right? And,
yeah.
And that's really only a question that you can answer. But I think it goes back to what I said before. entrepreneurship like is about is very similar to money. Like it's this much skill and know-how. There's a little bit more in terms of know who, but the lion's share of what it takes is really about being more comfortable in periods of uncertainty.
Yes.
The people who hold on, the people who continue to build while everyone else is giving up and letting go, those are the people that oftentimes can kind of assume ownership and they, as a result, benefit from it.
Yeah, I love the metaphor about the crypto enthusiast, because you're absolutely right. It is, when you are married to an entrepreneur or when you are an entrepreneur, it is mostly a belief in creating something that is bigger than you and believing in something that's bigger than you. And it's not just related to crypto or entrepreneurship. The same is true if you're married to a devout Christian or any other religious belief. If they live their lives believing that they are serving something that's bigger than them and that there is a heaven or some sort of afterlife, as their partner, you are somewhat subject to that. And you have to decide, like, how can we get aligned so that your belief doesn't overtake my beliefs or that we have the same beliefs, right? So to answer the question of when to give up on your dreams, it's such a personal question. And I think all I can do is tell you what I've learned from my own experience as someone who has felt as close to the edge as she is. One, I would not take any money from your retirement account. Like, you already are underfunded as an individual, as a woman, and I wouldn't take any money until you've proven that you can generate higher returns on your own.
Correct.
Right? When you know that you can double your money in your own business quicker than the market can, then by all means, let that be the thing that informs whether you withdraw or not withdraw. But don't do it because you're strapped for cash. As Julian said, there are other ways to generate quick cash, whether it's selling something or picking up a side hustle. Just try not to touch your retirement accounts, right? The second thing is that your business is still very young, and so it's hard to answer whether the performance is due to seasonality or timing, or if the business model is just flawed to begin with. So you really need to focus on getting clarity there. I know that she said her husband didn't have a plan, but he definitely had some sort of vision. I mean, I don't know why else someone would take out $100,000. So y'all need to work out what elements fell flat and what the thinking was there. Like, get that written down, documented. You need to get on board. Don't be afraid to question assumptions. Yeah. Like, just, you know, get into the numbers a little bit. You know, sometimes it's not failure. You're just not done yet. Like, you're just in the middle. You're in the dip. Seth Godin wrote a book called The Dip, and he talks about this, where it's just like, to your point, them years where everybody was clowning Bitcoin holders, right now they're out of the dip. And so they're feeling pretty good. But that doesn't mean that there isn't another one coming. So recognize whether you might be in the dip. There's a guy named Dan Andrews who says that there is a 1,000-day rule for entrepreneurs. And he says to give yourself 1,000 days to replace your salary. So in your case, $75,000, 1,000 days. Now, for those first 1,000 days, you're probably going to lose money because you don't know what you're doing. You're trying to figure out how to replace your salary, but you have to get through those 1,000 days or 3 years to know that your business model is an expensive one. You didn't pick anything asset light. Doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it, but it's an expensive business model. So you have to have a real conversation with your husband to determine whether you can get through those 1,000 days without ending your marriage, especially while you're still working a 40-hour job, right? So I think there's some tough conversations that you and husband need to have. I think you need to go into those as open-minded as possible, because there's two sides of this. And to Julian's point, you need to prepare for either way. You need to prepare that he's right, or that you're right, or that the answer is somewhere in the middle, and that even if you break even, there's a lot that can be learned from this experience. And so that would be my advice there, is just to, you know, if the marriage is a good one and worth preserving, which I imagine it is if you reached out to us, then let that be the center of the conversation and a guide for how you move forward.
Yeah. Well, this was interesting. I hope that she got something out of it. I hope that there were others who might be in a similar situation. I think we said this at the top of the episode, but what I was also really interested in with respect to this conversation, obviously there's a gender dynamic here where there is a husband who's the entrepreneur and the wife is wondering or wanting to be supportive. I probably know more female entrepreneurs where the situation is
reversed. I was
going to
say that.
This year as well. And so for anyone that's out there and they may be locking the context of the situation in their brain, I would really caution you to say this, you know, this arguably has very little to do with these dynamics, aside from some of the spicier parts of the conversation, right? Like, I think I know far more female entrepreneurs than
I would
do
love
male
to hear.
Entrepreneurs.
Listen.
And so I think there are just as many husbands out there who might be able to listen to this podcast episode and say, you know what, this is interesting because I'm in a similar situation. And so hopefully they can learn something from this as well. Now, I doubt your wife or a partner is a trucker,
but still, write us a note. Yeah, I would love to help that situation as well. If you have a situation, we'll obviously keep it anonymous. But if you are a husband who is, or a male partner who is funding their wife's creative entrepreneurial vision, but if you are a husband or on the other side of that coin and you're funding your wife's entrepreneurial vision, I know several Black women that have started ventures in the last year, either because of layoffs or just because
it's the leading group of entrepreneurs.
It's the fastest growing group of entrepreneurs. Yeah. We would love to help you break down the issue there as well, because I think there is a gendered component to this. I think that it's worth discussing. And I think that the mindset and the gaps required, like, to actually pursue and finish are important to break down. So it doesn't even have to be about entrepreneurship. I really enjoyed this episode. So if you just have any questions, whether it's about debt payoff or investment, it's not investing advice. Let me make the legal disclaimer. This is for entertainment, educational purposes only. We'd love to hear from you. So send us a note at hello@richandregular.com.
Love it. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast. If you like what you heard, you know what to do. Leave us a 5-star rating and review, and we will see you next week.
Yes. All right. If you like videos like this and want to see more, make sure you click subscribe and turn on notifications.